Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today we have some news from Washington, D.C. about a bill introduced by two San Diego congressmen, Juan Vargas and Duncan Hunter, to help expedite visas for refugees fleeing from ISIS forces in Iraq and Syria. On our Capitol report, also hear about a bill introduced by San Diego Congresswoman Susan Davis aimed at reducing sexual assaults on college campuses. Plus, hear about a case before the Supreme Court that will determine whether the Americans with Disabilities Act provides protections to mentally ill people in confrontations with police. A verdict has been reached in the Cocos Fire case here in San Diego County, and we'll have details. Plus, learn why California's Secretary of State thinks voting registration should be automatic for all eligible people in our state. Warm weather is bringing out rattlesnakes across the region, and we'll have tips today for you on how to protect your dog from snake bite. We'll also tell you about the county's list of the top 10 trails in our area, including three right here in East County. San Diego is now the fifth largest county in America. Hear the latest census findings later on today. On Destination East County, we'll have plenty of fun festivals and events, from the Ramona Music Fest this weekend to some Easter egg extravaganzas. Our newsmaker interview today will be a replay, an oldie but goodie, of our visit to the Hearts and Hands Zebra Farm in Ramona. Yes, you heard that right. There are zebras in East County. We'll also have information on green updates to San Diego's building code and a preview of some new high-tech features on a futuristic automobile soon to roll out. Santee's long-standing mayor, Randy Vopel, is running for the Assembly. So is Michael Harrison, an aide to Congressman Hunter. We'll have some information on these two conservative candidates in this race, where no Democrat has yet announced plans to run. We'll also have a warning about fake utility employees and an update on actions taken after our investigative report aired on a change in county ambulance services. We'll have all these stories and more today, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. A bill introduced this week by San Diego congressional members Juan Vargas, a Democrat, and Duncan Hunter, a Republican, would provide expedited processing for religious minorities in Iraq and Syria. Mark Arabo, a spokesman for Iraqi Chaldeans in America, worked with the congressman on the measure to help save lives of those threatened by ISIS forces. He says, "This piece of legislation introduced by our local delegates is a turning point in the genocide of the Christian people. The passage of H.R. 1568 is a matter of life or death to my people. From this point onwards, my only goal and commitment is towards garnering congressional support for this bill. The lives of thousands stand precariously in the balance until this act sees the light of day. The Protecting Religious Minorities Persecuted by ISIS Act of 2015 could provide refugee status for thousands stranded by America's failure thus far to process refugees in the danger-prone region. Arabo plans a trip to Washington in mid-April to lobby Congress and the White House on the measure. The bill currently has emerged with strong bipartisan support throughout the nation, with numerous Republican and Democratic co-sponsors," Arabo said in a press statement. "The bill will essentially cut the waiting time for processing and allow victims to apply directly to the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program with heightened level of status."
San Diego Congresswoman Susan Davis has introduced legislation in the House to establish an independent advocate on campus for sexual assault survivors. California's Senator Barbara Boxer introduced the Senate version of the bill last week. The Survivor Outreach and Support Campus Act requires that higher education institutions receiving federal assistance create an independent advocate for campus sexual assault prevention and response. Congresswoman Davis says, "The SOS Campus Act will create a critical resource for sexual assault survivors, an advocate who will be looking out for their rights and interests. This will encourage more survivors to come forward and help create an atmosphere on campuses that these crimes will not be tolerated. The Independent Advocate would guide sexual assault victims who ask for help with information on how to report the assault to law enforcement, getting emergency medical care, crisis intervention counseling and ongoing counseling, as well as obtaining legal services. The services may be provided on campus in consultation with a rape crisis center, legal organization, or community-based organization. It would also raise awareness on its services and prevention. The bill also prohibits retaliation or penalizing a victim of sexual assault for reporting an assault to the Independent Advocate. Last year, Senator Boxer and Congresswoman Davis sent a letter to University of California President Janet Napolitano and California State University Chancellor Timothy P. White, and both agreed to voluntarily implement provisions of the legislation by establishing an independent on-campus advocate on every campus. The SOS Campus Act is supported by the University of California, California State University, the Victim Rights Law Center, and the American Association of University Women and other organizations. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
This is Leon Thompson with the Capitol Report on East County Magazine. The Supreme Court this week is hearing arguments in the case of San Francisco versus Sheehan to determine whether or not San Francisco police officers were justified in shooting and killing a mentally ill woman in her own home. The officers fired 5 rounds, and the case centers on whether non-lethal force should have been used in such a case. Hundreds of mentally ill people are killed by police each year, and the Treatment Advocacy Center estimates that at least half of all people shot to death by police each year have mental health problems. At issue is whether the Americans with Disability Act, or ADA, should require police to take extra steps to avoid harming a mentally ill person who is acting erratically or even violently. In the case in question, the woman was offered medications and holding a small bread knife. Could or should officers have been able to defuse the situation without killing her, such as using a beanbag gun, taser, or other non-lethal methods? Oral arguments before the high court reveal stark differences in how justices view the issue, Slate.com reports. Justice Antonin Scalia said the legal question centers on whether the law protects armed and violent suspects who are disabled. While some of the justices seemed more concerned with threats to police officers or public safety, Justice Sonia Sotomayor argued that humanity must be infused into the proceeding. After all, the woman was in her own home, not out trying to ambush police when she was confronted. Unless we want a society in which the mentally ill are automatically killed, Sotomayor stated, isn't the ADA intended to ensure that police officers try mitigation in these situations before they jump to violence? Justice Stephen Beyer had to recuse himself from the case since his brother issued the ruling at the trial court level in this case. That leaves the prospect of a 4-4 split and one less voice to weigh in on this important case, assessing rights of the disabled versus safety of police and the public.
The Cocos Fire charred nearly 2,000 acres and burned down dozens of homes in San Marcos and Harmony Grove in May of 2014. On Wednesday, Judge Howard Shore ruled that a 13-year-old girl was responsible for intentionally and maliciously starting the devastating blaze. The girl had previously started a small fire in her backyard that was doused by firefighters after her mother called 911. The next day, even as a devastating firestorm raged in Carlsbad, the young teen lit another small fire further from her home. Arson investigators concluded that an ember from the blaze blew nearly a mile to ignite dry brush in a canyon, sparking the Cocos Fire. Judge Shore asked, why would a person having seen the consequences of setting their first fire set a second fire the next day? But he also stated, I have no doubt, based on the evidence, that the minor had no intention of burning homes or causing substantial damage to property. The teen will face sentencing on April 15th in juvenile court on 4 charges. It's not yet clear what punishment she will face due to her young age at the time of the crime. She is 14 years old now. Her parents could be forced to pay restitution, up to certain limits set in state law, for the damages caused by the fire. The defense had argued that investigators were wrong to conclude that an ember traveled a mile to spark the Cocos Fire, and they contended that there could have been someone else in the canyon who was responsible. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
What if every California citizen could be eligible to vote? California Secretary of State Alex Padilla wants to register citizens automatically using Department of Motor Vehicle records and potentially info from other state agencies. I think most Californians ought to participate and would love to participate, Padilla says. The Sacramento Bee reports. Let's get them on the rolls automatically and put all the resources and energy we've put into voter registration into voter education. Two legislators, Democratic Assembly members Kevin McCarty and Luis Alejo, have indicated they plan to work with Padilla to draft a bill. So how many people would be affected? Padilla estimates that nearly 7 million people who are eligible to vote in California have not registered. Oregon has enacted a similar policy, mailing ballots for every citizen listed with its Department of Motor Vehicles. Advocates hope automatic voter registration will boost participation in elections in California, where voter turnout rates have been anemic in recent years. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
The weather is warming up, and snakes are coming out of hibernation. Local hikers are reporting that several rattlesnakes have been spotted on trails such as Cowles Mountain. Rattlers pose a concern not only to hikers, but also to dogs. They can be found on trails, at home, or even on the beach. In fact, a man was bitten in Ocean Beach earlier this month. Short of leaving man's best friend indoors, what can you do to protect your dog? There are some options. You can ask your veterinarian for a rattlesnake vaccine, which is administered in two parts. A dog bitten by a rattlesnake should still be taken to a veterinarian for evaluation and possible treatment. Also, the vaccine is not effective in every variety of snake. It's based on a common rattlesnake species. But the vaccine can buy you time, since snake bites can be deadly for your canine companion. Another option is to enroll your dog in a rattlesnake aversion class, which teaches the dogs to avoid snakes. While helpful, the training is only effective in keeping dogs from actively going after a snake. It won't protect a pooch frolicking through dense brush and accidentally startling a snake from being bitten, for instance. It's wise to keep your dog on a leash when hiking, and to use extra caution during the spring months when rattlesnakes are most active and bites are most common. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
If you think San Diego is having some growing pains, you just may be right. The Census Bureau's numbers are in, and San Diego County is now the fifth most populous county in the nation. Over 3.3 million people now call San Diego County home, and we're growing fast, too. Between July 2013 and 2014, we added the fourth most people of any other U.S. county, growing by 41,000 people in that 1 year. So where are those four counties with populations that are bigger than San Diego's? Los Angeles County is number one with over 10 million residents. Cook County, Illinois, which includes Chicago, has over 5 million inhabitants, followed by Harris County, Texas, home to Houston, with 4.4 million, and Maricopa County, Arizona, which includes Phoenix, with just over 4 million people living there. Two other California counties, Orange and Riverside, also made the list of the top 10 most populous counties nationwide.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Spring is here, and it's a great time to put down the electronic devices and enjoy the natural environment or participate in a sport that you can do at your own pace, such as hiking. The San Diego County Parks and Recreation Department has more than 300 miles of trails throughout the county. The county has picked out 10 trails for a top 10 list for you to check out, with a wide variety of lengths, skill levels, and views. So whether you're taking your first steps or looking for new hiking challenges, there's something for everyone to enjoy. You can find the county's top 10 hikes at countynewscenter.com. There are hikes listed countywide, including these three in East County. The Ramona Grasslands Preserve, which has an easy stroll along a 4-mile loop trail. The Santa Isabel Preserves, which offer over 18 miles of moderate to difficult hiking trails, including two loop trails through areas surrounded by oak woodlands, native grasslands, and fields of wildflowers. El Capitan Preserve in Lakeside, which offers a strenuous hike for experienced hikers only along a rugged granite ridgeline with stunning views of ocean and mountains. You can also join the El Cajon Mountain Extreme Hiking Challenge. Meet the ranger at the El Capitan Preserve parking lot on Saturdays at 8 a.m. for this 7-hour, 12-mile round-trip hike. Hiking has several health benefits. According to the American Hiking Society, hiking can help you potentially lose weight, reduce heart disease, decrease hypertension, and reduce stress and anxiety. Before setting out on a hike, make sure you take into account the difficulty of a trail and your own physical fitness level. Bring plenty of water, dress properly, stay on marked trails, and make sure you let someone know where you are hiking. The Parks and Recreation Department also has several guided hikes throughout the year in various parks. You can find out more online. Also, check out other helpful resources in the County News Center's Trail Guide resources, including tips for staying safe in the heat and precautions to take while enjoying our local trails. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes the Ramona Music Festival and Vallecito Days, Recreating Frontier Life, plus our very own party with the press.
We'll also have a preview of coming attractions, including Egg Hunt's April Pools Day in La Mesa and readings of baseball's most famous stories.
Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
Take a trip back in time to life in the 1860s frontier during Vallecito's Day on Saturday, March 28th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Vallecito's County Park. This year's event focuses on cattle drives and cattle ranching along the Southern Overland Trail, with cattle ranching demonstrations as well as the arrival of trail riders on horseback. You can also visit with pioneer men and women in period attire, visit a mountain man camp, and hear historic talks, as well as experiencing frontier equipment, crafts, and firearms. Visitors are encouraged to dress in frontier attire. Be sure to bring a picnic lunch, since there is no food at the site. Vallecitos County Park is located in the Anza Borrego Desert Park on County Route S2 at mile marker 34 and 35. For more information, visit sdparks.org.
The Ramona Music Fest will be held March 28th in Ramona, featuring emerging talent and popular San Diego musicians playing everything from rock to reggae and from country to Americana. This all-day outdoor event benefits the Ramona Rotary and Kiwanis Clubs. The festival will be held at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center, also known as the Rodeo Fairgrounds, at the northeast end of downtown Ramona. For details, visit ramonamusicfest.org.
The Alpine American Legion Post 258 will present the Red, White, and Blue Poker Run to support Alpine veterans on March 28th. Check-in begins at 8:30 a.m. and the run takes off at 10 a.m. from 3328 Alpine Boulevard and will travel to other local veteran posts.
Adrian Nims will perform a free saxophone and flute concert on Saturday, March 28th at 3 p.m. in the Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center Theater. Seating is limited to 93 people and are available on a first-come, first-served basis. For directions to the park, visit mtrp.org.
The Easter Bunny train will be rolling out of the Campo Depot at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum on March 28th and 29th and on April 4th. This annual family event includes a ride aboard the vintage train and an Easter egg hunt. For details, visit psrm.org.
East County Magazine invites you to come party with the press at our special event on Tuesday, March 31st at the San Pasquale Winery Tasting Room in La Mesa's downtown village. We'll be rolling out a sneak preview of our new special La Mesa Community Section. Plus, we'll have some great food, wine tasting, prizes, and surprises. For reservations, visit eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Baseball fans can listen to baseball's most famous readings while savoring wines at San Pasquale Winery's tasting room in La Mesa on April 2nd. Who's on first? That would be Right Out Loud founders Walter Ritter and Veronica Murphy, and the evening's host, La Mesa Mayor Mark Arapostathis. This free La Mesa Arts Alliance event will begin with no host reception at 6:30 p.m. and curtain time at 7 p.m. For details, contact friends at lamesaparks.org.
Santee Lakes invites the public to its annual extravaganza on April 4th. This community event features continuous egg hunts for children ages 8 and under, live entertainment, a petting zoo, pony rides, craft booths, and carnival rides. For full details, hop on over to SanteeLakes.com.
12 top bands will take stage at the 16th annual Spring Harp Fest, a harmonica extravaganza at La Mesa's Harry Griffin Park on Saturday, April 4th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. This will be all-day harmonica music. This annual outdoor family-friendly musical tribute is a fundraiser to support children's music education in San Diego. Last year, the organization donated $3,000 of proceeds to the Blues Lovers United of San Diego's Blues in the Schools program to help pass the love of the harmonica on to the next generation. For a full lineup, see springharpfest.org.
The city of La Mesa will host April Pools Day on April 11th from 12 to 3 p.m. at the La Mesa Community Pool to promote water safety. Activities include swimming lessons, water safety, and CPR presentations, synchronized swimming, and water polo demonstrations and a mock rescue by city lifeguards and the fire department. April Pools Day is a free event for the whole family, so bring your swimsuits.
The Julian Family Fiddle Camp will be held at Camp Cedar Glen April 8th through 12th, providing an immersion-style roots music camp for folks of all ages and levels wanting to improve their skills on fiddle, mandolin, guitar, or old-time banjo. Some of the most renowned North American artists serve as faculty, with attendees coming from across the United States as well as abroad. Tents and RVs are allowed and encouraged, with evening concerts for the public on Friday, April 10th, and Saturday, April 11th at 7 p.m. For more information, visit thefamilyfiddlecamp.com. That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. My guest today is Nancy Nunke, who is the executive director of the Hearts and Hands Animal Rescue. It's an education and therapy center, and they do some amazing things with some very special animals, including zebras. You heard it right. We have a zebra ranch right here in East County. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam.
Now, I have to ask, how did you develop an interest in zebras, of all things? How did this get started?
Well, it happened many decades ago. I was a horse trainer, and I showed horses. And I had a wildlife park call me and ask me if I could train a zebra they had a problem with. And apparently this two-year-old little stallion was chewing at people through the chain link fence and didn't make it too inviting for the people who came to see him. So I said, of course, and my heart was going pitter-patter, pitter-patter, and I had no idea whatsoever what I was getting myself into. But this wild little zebra ended up coming to my barn, and within about 10 seconds, I realized it was not a horse with stripes.
It was a horse of a different color, in a sense. How did you realize that? What happened?
He wasn't trained at all, and I had to send him into my barn, into an open stall, and the second that I shut the bottom door of the Dutch doors of his stall, he started coming out over the top door.
Uh-oh.
And so that was some pretty fast action we had to do. And just all of his behaviors just showed us that this was not even a typical, but a wild horse would do.
Wow.
So I had a lot of homework to do. So what I did was spent the next 60 days at a different wildlife park. And I went every morning and stayed till nighttime, and I observed their zebra group.
Interesting.
So that's how I learned enough just to get him to the point where I could take him back and put 90 days later to his wildlife park, and he'd no longer chewed on the fence. But it began a lifetime of my love and devotion to the zebras.
Now, you now have various types of zebras at your ranch. How many varieties do you have?
We have all three species, including the Grevy's, which is the largest of the zebras, and they have a large mule-like head and very large umbrella-type ears, and they have a very narrow striping pattern, and it's vertical on their body, and they're endangered. And then the second one, which is vulnerable here and endangered in a lot of countries, it's going to be considered endangered very shortly.
So you're actually helping to preserve the endangered species.
Yes, we are, yeah.
And you're USDA licensed and everything,
absolutely,
right?
USDA and Fish and Game and so on. So the second one is the Hartman's Mountain Zebra.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we just had a baby born this year. He's just about 3 months old. Thank you. And it's been 4 years for us. So it's just wonderful that we were able to have this little baby born and able to share it with the public, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're the second size. They're the kind of the middle size zebra. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is the Grant Zebra or the Plain Zebra. And they're what's considered the most common zebra. But every year, thousands and thousands are being depleted. So they're much less common. And it's not really a good word to use for them anymore.
Wow, that's really sad. But it's good that you're able to help work on saving the species, even if it's in captivity. Now, you've developed a reputation for some amazing training techniques that you do with these zebras. In fact, I understand you're known as the Zebra Whisperer.
I guess that's what they call me. Yes.
Yeah, you do something called friendship training.
Friendship training is something that the zebras taught me.
Tell us what that involves.
Friendship training is something that I developed over several decades with the zebras. Zebras cannot be force trained, and force training is something that is used with horses. Sometimes we decide ourselves, you know, what is force training and what isn't force training, and then we say, well, this is natural training, natural horsemanship, and there's a variety of people out there that are using natural horsemanship in how they define it. But really, it's the animal that decides whether it's force training or not. So horses are domesticated, and they are much more submissive to our ways of training them. They don't fight very much.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very difficult to know if we're forcing them to do something or if we're asking them to politely to do it, because most of the times they'll just do it. But with zebras, when you use typical horse training on them, they will say absolutely not, mm-hmm. and they'll fight.
And that can even be dangerous. I know you've told me zebras don't make good pets because of their temperament. Tell us about that.
That's very correct. Children should never be around zebras. And you know, occasionally we have a little baby or something, but a full-size zebra. Because of the way that they have to be trained,
mm-hmm.
and that's what friendship training is all about, which is we become the animal to train the animal.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And when you do that, a zebra will become your very best friend. And zebras, in the plain zebras, the Grants, each has one best friend in their group. And if someone else in the group tries to interfere with that friendship, like walking between them, coming to eat with the two friends, they will get shunned, they will get kicked, they will get bitten. And until human beings understand that the zebra social protocol is friendship-based, then people can't train zebras. Mm-hmm. And yet, here with friendship training at Hearts and Hands Animal Rescue, we train zebra after zebra after zebra after zebra, and have proven over many decades that friendship training, which is the way they train mm-hmm. each other, is the way to go.
Yeah, I've seen this in action at your ranch, and it's really amazing what you've accomplished with some of these animals. Now, zebras aren't the only animals at the ranch. Another unusual animal that you have there is the wild Mongolian horse, or Przewalski's horse, that was actually extinct, I understand, or down to just one stallion in the whole world left in the wild. Tell us about these.
Yes, these are just absolutely amazing horses. Until several years ago, I had never even seen one myself mm-hmm. In person. And then all of a sudden, we have 12 of them that we had to rescue.
Yeah, and we should add that what happened was when it was discovered there was only one left in the wild, a search was made to find some that were in captivity and to begin breeding them. And so how many are there left in the world today?
There are about 1,200 now in the world.
Wow.
Coming from just 9 breedable animals.
Amazing.
That were found in a zoo. So, you know, people can talk about zoos and say there shouldn't be any, but if there weren't, there would be so many species of endangered animals that would now be extinct.
Sure.
And we would never have the opportunity to see them again or to breed them and mm-hmm. then put them back in the wild, as we've now done with the pea horses.
That's wonderful.
There are 3 groups
yeah,
back in the wild now.
That's wonderful. And what have you found these horses to be like when you've worked with the Przewalski's horses? What are they like? What are some of the challenges you face there?
Well, just like the zebra, and in fact even more so, they will not be force trained. And that is why no one has ever been able to train them. Even Genghis Khan and his henchmen could never train these Przewalski's horses.
So the Mongol hordes could not bring this Mongolian wild horse to be tamed.
That's right. So when we had one little one come on her own to us, an orphan, I thought that would be a great opportunity since I couldn't introduce her as so young into one of the other groups.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, let's try some friendship training with her and see. Maybe this could work.
And it did.
Well, she took to it just immediately. She's now 3 years old, and she's even inviting us to get on her back.
My goodness.
And this is something that no one has ever seen in with these horses, and people have tried for centuries to train them. Even in our modern day societies where they're in zoos, they bring in the top horse trainers and have tried to train these horses mm-hmm. and no one's been successful. And here at Hearts and Hands Animal Rescue with friendship training, it just was so normal for her to be trained this way. And there was absolutely just no issues with it. And to me, she's just like another horse. But when you approach her in a different manner, the way people approach horses, all of a sudden she becomes a pea horse again.
Now, another very special horse you have there is called the Caspian horse. And this one, it's a small breed of horse, but very strong, I understand. And it was thought to be gone from the face of this earth. And then how was it rediscovered?
Well, it's very interesting. They were thought to be gone for 1,300 years.
My goodness.
And this is the horse that when you are over in Persia, in the Persian countries, mm-hmm. you will see in the architecture, you'll see soldiers in their ancient warrior garb riding these teeny horses, and the feet of the men are right down to the ankles of the horses.
Wow.
And when I saw those, I thought those were just caricatures of, you know, mm-hmm. of the real thing. And
but
in fact, that's exactly what it is. These horses are 11 to 13 hands tall. And so good difference of, you know, 8 inches difference mm-hmm. in the lower to the higher height range. But what makes them so fascinating is that a full grown, you know, an adult about 150 mm-hmm. pounds can ride these horses. And there is a physical reason for that with the horse. And that is that their scapular, their shoulder bone is actually the same width as it is on a 15-hand quarter horse.
Wow, that's amazing. And the story behind this, I understand, is there was an American woman that was visiting over there in what used to be known as Persia, now Iran, and she saw a peddler with a horse pulling a cart, this small horse pulling this huge, heavy cart, and asked, where did it come from? And tell us what the answer was.
Yes, and he said he had gone up into the mountains when he needed a horse, and would get a horse out of the mountains. There were wild horses up there.
Yeah, and in this war-torn region, where obviously there's threats to them from more than the usual problems.
Correct.
So this woman then managed to get a few out out of the country and started a captive breeding program in addition to whatever's left in the wild there.
That's correct. She sent some to Australia, to England, and to the United States. I think we got 24 here. Well, there's about 900 in the world now, and we have we have registration associations for them. People just don't know this horse, and yet this horse trains up. So in 30 days, you can train a horse well enough for a child to ride it.
So this is not a wild thing like the Przewalskis or the zebras. This is something that actually is accustomed to domestication because, as you've noted, the soldiers used them for riding purposes 1,300 years or more ago.
Yes, this is one of the most ancient breeds of horse in the world. And the oldest breed of horse in the world with a single toe is actually the Przewalski's horse.
My goodness, isn't that amazing? An interesting bit of trivia, by the way, about back to the zebras for a moment, is that they actually used to be found in San Diego County, I understand. There were giant zebras that roamed the Anza Borrego Desert at one time.
I don't know how giant they were, but there is a skull of a zebra that was found in the desert, and they have it in the museum down there.
There were once zebras roaming the Anza Borrego Desert. Another thing that you do, now you do a lot of not just rescue. Most of the animals you take in now actually are rescues that come from other places where maybe they were abused, an owner died. You've taken in everything from Zorses to zonkies that are mixes of zebras and horses, zebras and donkeys, zebras where the owner can't care for them anymore. But you also use a lot of these animals for education and therapy, working with people who've maybe been in accidents, been injured themselves. Tell us about a couple of the animals that you've used for that are so inspiring to people.
Well, our program is very unique, our therapy program. We like to call it our wellness program. So we have people come in for various situations with PTSD. We have burn survivors. We have, again, people who have been in debilitating accidents. We have people who are suffering from grief, which can be very debilitating. Yeah. And grief can come in various fashions, whether it's from having a loved one die or losing a job, moving, changing schools. You know, there's so many reasons why people actually will grieve. But we use our animals that have very similar stories to what the person coming in would have. So, for example, we have a little horse named Chansey who came to us over 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And Chansey had been attacked by a pack of dogs, and his neck had been broken. Mm-hmm. His shoulders had been displaced by 6 inches. Wow. And his upper muzzle had been removed completely. Unfortunately, it had eaten by one of the dogs, so it was never able to be recovered.
But you've done amazing things, though, to help the tissue regrow over the teeth and everything, the mouth.
So he's been in recovery with us for 3 years. His neck is completely better. His shoulders are back in place, and we're talking about 6 hours minimum every single day for over a year.
Yeah, you're a no-kill facility. It was very impressive when I visited to see you have animals that were, you know, the advice had been put them down, they'll never walk again. You have many where you've been able to actually help them be able to walk again when they were thought to be paralyzed.
Yes, yeah. It's just a matter of being determined. You know, we don't make those decisions for the animals. If they want to eat and they want to drink, that means they want to live. Mm-hmm. And so we just do whatever it takes. And we have so many wonderful therapists that come and help us and volunteer and share their time with the animals so that they can recover. And it, just like people, there's no magic number of days, weeks, months, or even years in recovery. We have a zebra. His name is Zinti. He has his own Facebook page, Zinti the
Zinti
Zebra.
The zebra. Z-I-N-T-Y.
And Zinti is our comedian. He's a resident comedian. And he broke his pelvis 7 years ago. And he has one leg shorter than the other. He gets around the ranch. He's our mascot. He runs all over the ranch. Well, he does his special little hitch in his giddy-up gate all over the ranch.
Wow.
But he wants to be here, and his sense of humor is the most amazing thing, you know. So there are a lot of people think that because an animal has an injury that it just should be put down, you know. And that's just another way, they call it a polite way of saying kill. Yeah. But that's not something we do at the ranch. And so these animals, for the rest of their lives, give back to humans. And the sharing and the relationships are the most amazing things that you see develop between our wellness people and these animals.
Obviously, obviously it's very expensive to care for this many animals. One of the things that you do to raise funds, although you're not breeding and selling these exotic species, but you do breed miniature spotted donkeys, beautiful animals, and Bengal cats, I understand.
Yes, those are my personal animals, and I breed them to help support the rescue. 100% of the money goes to the rescue.
Well, there you go.
So and those are animals that you would rarely, if ever, see in a rescue. Mm-hmm. So the people that are looking for those animals are looking specifically one of those and not to a rescue for them.
So. Right. Now, you also have something very unusual. I understand that you just within the last couple of weeks got into the Guinness Book of World Records recently. Tell us about that.
Well, we're not quite there yet. We're just waiting for our approval.
Okay.
But we did do our Guinness Book of World Records attempt for the world record for the smallest bull, B-U-L-L.
And how small is he?
He's 28 3/16 inches tall.
Oh my goodness, I think I have a cat that's almost that big.
Yes, he's very, very tiny. And something really exciting is that we also, in the same group of little cows that came into us, that we also have a little girl whose name is Bluebell.
Wow. And these are rescue animals, to be clear. Yeah.
Yes, they were actually very thin and they were mangy. Someone purchased them who knew us. They were at a sale and they brought them to us. And so, of course, they're very healthy now and
what kind of
chubby.
What species of bull is this?
It's called a miniature zebu.
Zebu.
Yeah, zebu. And these are one of the most ancient breeds of cattle, and they're naturally very tiny, and they're from India and Sri Lanka.
Fascinating. Do you only handle exotic animals, Nancy, or do you ever take in domestics?
We actually have about one-third is exotics, and then two-thirds is our local domestic animals, including dogs, cats, you know, chickens, goats, birds, and a lot of horses.
Wonderful.
And so anybody who's looking to adopt a horse, a full-size horse, or even a miniature horse, please give us a call because we might have the animal for you.
Well, very good. That's wonderful to know. Now, you've withstood, like so many in East County, the tragedy of the 2007 wildfire. I understand that it destroyed the entire ranch.
Yes, we were very fortunate that we had an early warning of the fire. We could see it right from the ranch when it first started. And we also saw that the wind was, we did the old finger test and, and it was coming our way. So
this was in Ramona, the Witch Creek fire,
yes, the Witch
which
Creek
came
fire.
Through there so fast. Yes. It was really almost no
so
warning.
So we had about, we had 6 horse trailers in 6 hours. And all we could do was just keep taking the animals off the ranch.
And you managed to save all of them?
And we managed to save all of the larger animals.
Wonderful.
And just a few of the birds that were set free. There was no time to, you know, be able to catch them. Ended up going back into their pens. So it was a very, very sad time for us, as well as a time of elation that we were able to get almost everything off of
but
the
But all
ranch.
The large and all these endangered animals
Yes, we got everything
saved.
Off. So it was wonderful. But it devastated the entire ranch.
And you lost your home.
We lost the residence. We lost everything there. All of the equipment, all the feed carts, the truck, one of the vehicles.
What kind of insurance did you have adequate insurance for that?
Unfortunately, we were underinsured intentionally by our insurance company. As many people were at that time. And so a little bit of insurance that we did get instead of building the residence with it, we had to bring all the animals back because they were in temporary places.
Yeah, so you chose to take care of the animals at your own expense instead of rebuilding your own home up there.
Yes, that's what happened.
Are you still hoping to rebuild someday?
The house has, it's got framing around it and it's been sitting there and we're hoping eventually to get it finished. Yeah.
Wow. Do you need volunteers at the ranch? Can people come and help in that way?
We do need volunteers. We're always grateful when people would like to spend a day a week or more volunteering their time to help out. There's so much to do still after the fire. There's still so much to do in getting the ranch back to the way it was prior to that. And we really need volunteers to help us with fundraising events.
So you just had a music festival, I understand. And what else is coming up?
Yeah, we had a music festival. We also did the Amazing Pet Expo. And we have the Night of the Horse coming up where in April, on April 19th, where we have been asked to partake in the basically the greatest horse show on earth.
Where and when will that be?
And that'll be at Del Mar. Mm-hmm. There'll be a lot of great acts that come in, and this is our first year to participate, and we're actually
going to
be doing the rare and endangered animals. So we will have the availability of people to come in and see Azores, Zonkey,
wow,
a couple of zebras, and Kaya the Przewalski's
yeah
horse.
Now, you're nonprofit, so I assume that people can, you accept donations, is that correct, if people are able to do that or wish to?
Yes, we're 501c3 nonprofit, mm-hmm, so that works for everybody's taxes,
mm-hmm,
and so we definitely will accept all the donations that come in and put it to good use to feed and house and care for all the animals.
Beautiful. And again, I'm talking with Nancy Nunke.
Yes.
With the Hearts and Hands Animal Rescue in Ramona. What is your website for people who wish to get more information or find out how they can help and get involved?
Our website is hhar.org.
hhar.org. Well, very good. And are there opportunities if people want to visit the ranch? Do you ever have times where it's open to the public or where you do tours or anything like that, Nancy?
Yes, people can call us, actually, and then we set up for tours.
Mm-hmm.
We do have three different ways that we tour, mm-hmm, the hour-and-a-half tour, which is the shorter one, mm-hmm, and then the two-hour tour, and then we actually have a three-hour tour, and in that one, we actually show people how we work with friendship training with
wow
the animals.
It's very wonderful. I've been on one of these tours, I know, and it was quite, you know, a media tour, but it was quite amazing and just really a very uplifting and fascinating place to visit. So, Nancy, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report on East County Magazine. New homes built in unincorporated San Diego County will soon be greener, or at least prepared to be greener, after the San Diego County Board of Supervisors approved changes to the county building code last week. The board voted 4-1 to approve four changes related to solar power and electric vehicles in the code. The changes will require all new homes to, one, be built with 200-amp electric panels, large enough to allow future electrical addition. Two, have electrical conduit built into homes that would allow homeowners to put in wiring for rooftop solar electricity generating panels. And three, have electrical conduit installed that would allow homeowners to add wiring for electrical car charging stations, if desired. And fourthly, be built with space reserved on south-facing rooftops that would allow homeowners to install solar photovoltaic panels. Supervisors Diane Jacob and Dave Roberts, who successfully lobbied the rest of the board in April to have staff look for cost-efficient green improvements for the building code, praised the additions Wednesday. They said the changes would give homeowners built-in power flexibility and add value to homes by adding features inexpensively during construction that would cost much more to add afterwards. Board Chairman Bill Horn voted against adding the changes, saying it was not the county's role to tell builders what to put in homes to make them more attractive. If the building code ordinance changes are approved again by the board in a second reading, they are expected to go into effect July 1st.
For today's technology report, this is Rebecca Jeffers-Williamson for East County Magazine. Speeding tickets can be costly, and excessive speed can also cause many accidents. Now Ford is launching a new system called Intelligent Speed Limiter that drivers can activate to automatically detect the speed limit where they are driving and prevent the vehicle from going any faster. The new technology will roll out first in the Ford S-Max in Europe. The system uses a camera mounted on the windshield to scan highway signs and then adjust the amount of fuel going to the engine to keep the vehicle within the speed limit. A driver can also choose to deactivate the system temporarily by pressing hard on the gas pedal or pushing a button on the dash. The new vehicle comes with 20 different new technologies, such as the one that would automatically park your car in a tight parking space hands-free. The vehicle will also have options for technology to detect pedestrians, warn of collisions, and apply the brakes if a driver fails to respond. While such high-tech features may prove costly, the savings in lives could make investment in such technology a smart buy.
This is Ed Barreno with the weather report, hot off the presses. The National Weather Service predicts potentially record-breaking heat this weekend as a ridge of high pressure builds up along the west coast and offshore winds return. Inland valleys will see temperatures above 90 degrees, and some low desert areas could see their first triple-digit temperature readings of the year by Saturday afternoon. If you have outdoor activities planned, be sure to plan ahead and bring plenty of water and sunscreen.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on the race for the open 71st Assembly District being vacated by Brian Jones due to term limits. Randy Vopel, Santee's mayor for the last 15 years, has thrown his hat in the ring to run for the seat. Vopel will be running against Michael Harrison, who works for Congressman Duncan Hunter and previously served as an aide to Hunter's father, the former congressman. So far, no Democratic candidate has emerged in this heavily conservative district, which in the last election saw only two Republicans on the ticket for the first time. Vopel says he is running on his record as a staunch conservative. So conservative that in 2010, he actually left the Republican Party and registered as an independent. He told the UT San Diego that he was fed up with Republican Party ideals and identified more with the Tea Party ideals of lower taxes and smaller government. One of East County's most flamboyant political leaders, Vopel is also a staunch climate change denier, who once sent organizers of a climate change event an email urging them to enjoy their Wreck the Economy party, as he called it. An advocate of free market conservative policies, he points to his accomplishments as mayor. Those include building one of the biggest reserve funds per capita of any city in the region, keeping Santee fiscally sound even when its neighboring cities struggled. Though city spending was cut 16% in the lean years, and no sales tax hikes were imposed as they were in other cities, Santee residents still benefited from addition of a new teen center, ball fields, concert and recreational activities. Vopel and the council implemented pro-business policies, attracting major national restaurant chains and retailers, as well as upscale residential and office development. Michael Harrison, a Ramona resident originally from El Centro, studied government at Johns Hopkins University, according to his Facebook page. He has gained support of congressional members Daryl Issa, Duncan Hunter, and his father, as well as former Congressman Brian Bilbray. Harrison, too, says he will support conservative ideals and principles in government. He blames high taxes, overreaching regulations, and what he calls an unfavorable business climate for the state's economic problems. Harrison also says he wants to strengthen the education system, improve California's infrastructure, protect Prop 13, and promote California's business opportunities. Sources in the Democratic Party inform East County Magazine that they are still actively looking to recruit a candidate to run for this office.
I'm John Mattis, investigative guy, host of Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers, shining a light on shady deals all around us.
John Mattis has won 7 Emmy Awards, a Golden Mike, and the Edward R. Murrow Award for exposing fraud and corruption. Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers is produced by the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Ed Barreno, guest hosting Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers on the East County Magazine radio show. San Diego Gas and Electric Company is warning customers about a wire fraud that has been targeting SDG&E residential and business customers. Reports indicate that individuals are misrepresenting themselves as utility employees by calling customers and threatening to turn off electric and gas service if an immediate payment is not made. Customers are instructed to purchase a prepaid credit or debit card and to call another phone number where information is then obtained from the card and the cash value is stolen. SDG&E wants to prevent customers from becoming victims of this scheme. SDG&E does not call to ask for credit card information on the phone. Never give your credit card information to any caller. Only provide credit information if you place the call and know who it is that you're calling. If you received a phone call that is suspicious, and if you do have an outstanding balance to resolve, hang up and then call SDG&E at 1-800-411-7343.
This is Miriam Raftery with an important update to a story we reported on Monday about ambulance service that the county has signed effective April 1st. That contract only required 4 ambulances for an entire district stretching from the border north to Mount Laguna and from Jamul east to the Imperial County line.
Now, in response, Mercy Medical Transportation has gotten in touch and told us that it has decided to add two additional units, albeit voluntarily, and these will be permanently stationed here and not dependent on how many mutual aid agreements are signed. Alice Roche at Mercy told us in an email, as we took a tour of the service area and did more research, we found out that the area would be best served with the addition of those two units in Alpine and Otay Mesa. Our goal is for the best patient care and 100% response time compliance, not just adequate service. Although the units will be permanent, she adds, if we find that the locations of these two units need to be changed to allow for maximum coverage, we will. Also, these two additional units will be staffed by Mercy personnel. Originally, Mercy had considered positioning unmanned ambulances at fire stations and having firefighting paramedics man them. That's on top of the four ambulances that were required in the contract. But community members had voiced concerns over that plan, since fire stations in our rural areas have often had dark days with nobody manning the stations. Altogether, Mercy plans to station advanced life support ambulances 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in the following locations. Two ambulances in Alpine, where there's only one currently. Two at the Cal Fire County Fire Station in Otay Mesa, which currently has just one. One ambulance at the Cal Fire San Diego Rural Fire Station in Jamul, and one ambulance at the Lake Morena Cal Fire County Fire Station, which will be moved to the new station in Boulevard once construction of that station is completed. And we'll be asking supervisors as well if they plan to require an addendum to the contract to make this a requirement and not just voluntary on Mercy's part.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
In the good old summertime, in the good old summertime, strolling through the shady lane with your baby mine.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show.
We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space,
to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso.
We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery.
We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Priebel, Jim Hannibal, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Brian Boyko, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.